Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
All right, welcome in. Good Sunday morning to you. John Dickinson joined this morning and on into the afternoon by Kyle Madsen, K-Boogie. What's going on, my man?
Oh, not much. I'm hanging out. I watched a sporting event on Friday, a live one, where I didn't know the outcome, which was great. It was okay. Good to be back in that saddle.
I think you're good. A little bit ahead of me on that at this point, because I don't know that I've been able to watch anything that's currently available.
I decided to dive into the MLS on Friday night, and I watched my first ever start-to-finish MLS game. It was the Earthquakes and Sounders, and it was mostly just because it was a local team. It was a live event. My girlfriend was going to babysit, so I was going to have the house to myself, and I turned on the TV, and I switched it over to ESPN, and I watched 90-plus minutes of MLS soccer for the first time in my life, and it was awesome. I was so happy.
So it was awesome because it was something, or it was awesome because you discovered that you really liked it and you're going to add it to your viewing palette moving forward?
Maybe a little bit of both, but certainly more the first thing. Like, it was just great to be watching something competitive again. It was, like I said, a local team, so I can call myself an Earthquakes fan, even though I've never watched a game. And I like that. It wasn't that full kind of visceral reaction you get watching a sport you're more passionate about, but it was definitely there. It was definitely better than watching a game I've seen six other times and know how it goes. So it made me, what it ultimately did was it made me more giddy, I guess, for the fact we've got MLB opening day coming in 11 days. I really can't wait.
Yeah, there's been a lot of, you know, one of the phrases of the pandemic and everything that's been going on, as, you know, it pertains to the economy and things coming back and trying to do everything safely, is the notion, and the phrase you hear a lot is pent up demand. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of saving my pent up demand. I'm letting all that just get worked out and rolling toward July 23rd. And then July 30th, and then whenever there's actual, you know, training camp news in the NFL. Like, I'm just saving it all for that. I will watch some hockey at some point. It looks like, you know, their schedule, they're going to actually start playing games on August 1st. So you have this scenario where we continue to push towards sports, and August 1st, I think it was Richard Deitch that put the tweet out, where he noted that, hey, August 1st, you have MLB, you're going to have NBA games. The NHL's back. The MLS is going to be rolling. You know, you're going to have NASCAR, and all of these different things are going to be going on. NFL training camp, at least, will be going through all the statistics for their intake tests and what, you know, their infection percentage is, if not actually, you know, running through some actual training camp news. But at the very least, I mean, you're going to have the four major sports all going at the same time, with golf and NASCAR and MLS.
It almost, when you put it like that, it almost feels normal. Now, what it actually looks like once it's all going on, we'll see. The MLS game I watched on Friday was a little weird because they don't do the ambient sound, they're not pumping in the crowd noise. they're just letting the coaches and the players and all the shouting that goes on in the field, they just let that rip. And it took a minute to kind of get used to, but it was a little bit fun. But I think the differences are going to be more stark in the viewing experience for all the other sports. Plus, you mentioned the testing with the NFL. What's the testing going to look like once these games start? And there's a lot of uncertainty going forward, but the fact that we're sports-wise trending toward all these things going on, it's a very, very welcome distraction.
Well, and look, and for those scoring at home, by the way, August 1st is 20 days away. It's 3 weeks from yesterday. So we're inside of 3 weeks until that day on August 1st where we could very well have all of those things going on. The other thing that we all have to keep in mind, and I always say this at the top of every show, it could all just come to a stop in a blink, yeah. Honestly, or in a series of blinks.
Yeah.
I mean, it could start and look great, relatively speaking, on July 25th, and by August 1st or August 2nd, it's all completely come crumbling down like a house of cards.
Yeah, that's the obvious caveat. I'm trying to not focus on it, though, because that aspect of it is such a bummer that I'm trying really hard to focus on the fact that, like, in 11 days, we're going to be looking forward to a real baseball game starting a 60-game MLB season where kind of anything can happen. And the further we get into this, I'm more and more confident in MLB's ability to kind of get their testing under control. The NBA seems to be doing a good job so far. No idea what the NFL is going to do. But as we kind of move forward in the calendar and the leagues kind of start to figure this thing out and figure out ways to kind of, I don't want to say control it, but minimize the widespread risk, I think that bodes well for the immediate future of sports and then long term, as long as, you know, we're dealing with this virus.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Kyle Madsen, we are with you here until 2 o'clock on 95.7 The Game. A lot to get to between now and then. Let's go ahead and start with the biggest news here locally over the course of the last couple of days. And I know we've had the discussion as the pandemic rolls on about, you know, players that would opt out, frankly. And I think, you know, a couple of weeks ago when we were last together, you know, you said, you know, how many guys do you think are going to opt out? Let's set the number. Will it be high profile players? And I said, well, I think there will be probably more than you think.
Yep.
And there will be some high profile players. And I put, you know, the if you're starting to look at, well, which guys would potentially look to opt out or not feel it's worth it. You know, there are pretty much three things that I put on my little list of, you know, which guys may not be into this, versus maybe some others. And the things that continually came to mind were, you know, players that have made, you know, massive amounts of life-changing money to where they're good to go. You know, not just their, you know, couple million here or there, but I mean, in the, you know, nine figures, let's say, over $100 right. million dollars or a lot of money throughout a career. And guys that have won rings. And then also guys that have, you know, specific family or personal situations. And, you know, when Buster Posey came out the very first day that the Giants were holding their practices over at Oracle Park and said that he wasn't completely 100% in, and, you know that he has a family, that he's won rings. And you also knew that he was dealing with something else. The Giants had referenced there was another personal issue that we didn't know about. And, you know, you put all those things in play, and it became apparent to me right from the jump. And I know we weren't on last weekend because of the holiday, but it became apparent to me that he probably wasn't going to play in 2020, just point blank right out of the chute. And then he goes ahead and he makes it official here on Friday. And when you look at all of the scenarios surrounding him, his family, and now the birth of these two adopted daughters that he and his wife Kristen are adopting, and that process all going through and coming to fruition, and the babies being born on the day that the Giants show up to camp. I mean, I was left on Friday morning as that announcement was being made, Kyle, just saying, well, this is an absolute, it's an absolute no-brainer.
Yeah.
I've said many times, I support anybody that makes the decision that this isn't for them in 2020 for whatever reason. But I mean, Buster Posey has probably the best reason in the world to not play in this 60-game season.
Yeah, there was going to be because I agree with you, it felt like just reading the tea leaves. And then when on a Friday morning at 9 a.m., they're announcing a press conference or a Zoom call or a Zoom conference with Buster Posey, it's like, okay, well, to what extent is this announcement going to be? He's not just getting on to say hi. So I had no negative feelings about it. It's like, yeah, of course, I'll opt out. Like, that is 100% something that is on the table. But then when, as you said, he presented the information and kind of the extent of it, and I thought he did a really good job kind of just laying everything out. It's really is like much more open than he needed to be, I thought, but it was extremely well laid out. And I don't know how anybody with a normal sense of sympathy or empathy or feeling toward another human being can have anything negative to say about what Posey is doing.
Yeah, so he opts out, and I think, you know, immediately you applaud him, and I mean, at least I do. I mean, everybody can be entitled to their own opinion, although I do think it's foolish, you know, and I know there has been some discussion. I don't know how much. I think sometimes things get overblown a little bit on Twitter. You know,
what?
Twitter is not the real.
No way.
Twitter is not the real world. I know sometimes we confuse that Twitter is the real world, but Twitter is very, 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 very small percentage of, you know, the actual sports fans in the population. But, you know, you start to see where, oh, is there a conversation about does this decision affect his legacy because, you know, he wants to keep his family safe and, you know, two newborn babies. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I just that level of conversation, like that one never crossed my mind to not only would it affect his legacy because it does not, but to even have that conversation. I mean, it just goes to show how far off the rails we've gotten, I think, as a sports society, to where during a pandemic you're even willing to broach that topic like it's legitimate.
Yeah, it's not. It wouldn't even for me. This specific situation, if we were not in a pandemic and he went, hey, you know what, I'm taking a step back for now, I don't even think it's a valid conversation to go, well, how's this going to affect his legacy? Like, who cares, man? Like, if you're we've gotten too far into, and I think this is to your point, we've gotten too far into the idea that athletes are somehow supposed to owe fans something all the time. And I get if somebody wants to say, like, well, if an athlete's going to be on the field and playing and they should try hard because people are watching, people are paying to watch them, okay, that's fine. But in no instance will or should anyone ever fault an athlete for putting their family above sports or their job. I think that's something that just about anybody would do. And
yeah,
athletes, they're like, they're human beings, and I think that this is a really good instance where Buster Posey did the correct human thing and the understandable human thing. And you can't fault him for that.
No. And I think it continues to, you know, I think at a time, because look, there is a baseball component to this, mm-hmm, and, you know, an organizational component to this. And I think at a time where from a baseball standpoint, the Giants are very much in flux and very much in transition. And you just kind of didn't know what to expect really from this 2020 season, you know, going back months ago when it, you know, looked like they would be a full 162 as normal. Like, you just don't know what to expect, although you kind of have a belief that it's not going to be good from a baseball standpoint. But with the pandemic and with, you know, things like Buster's decision and the way, you know, collectively the Giants as an organization have handled it, and the way they allow the face of their franchise, you know, to come out and be human, as you allude mm-hmm. to, like, I do think there is a positive impact of just, you know, and we see this a lot with the Warriors and Steve Kerr and his just empathy toward humanity, and Steph Curry and his, you know, empathy toward humanity and how humble he is for being, you know, even in being a brash superstar player mm-hmm. while he's on the floor. So I think while the Giants may be in an awkward place as a franchise from a baseball standpoint, I do think there's a positive tone that gets sent from, hey, our main guy, our number one guy is doing the right human thing mm-hmm. and we're supporting him for that. Even if it is price of admission, even if you view that as, well, duh, that's a no brainer. And that's how I look at it. But seeing, you know, Farhan Zaidi support him the way that he did, yes. and seeing even Gabe Kapler, you know, he's come out and said all the right things. And, you know, Gabe Kapler, not my jam as the hire for the Giants. I've been on the record as saying that.
Yeah.
And you know, I do think he benefits from, you know, I'll be honest, put the rat on the table. I mean, I do think he benefits from actually having to manage fewer games because, you know, the less focus there is on that and the more focus there is on him saying the right things can only help his cause, if that makes sense.
Yes, because, again, like, that has nothing to do with baseball. And I understand there's a several layers to the Gabe Kapler thing, but from a human standpoint, I think he genuinely cares about Buster Posey, and at least it seems like that in what he's saying. And you're absolutely right. Those two guys getting on the Zoom call and very outwardly expressing their support for Buster Posey's decision now, expressing support if he wants to be around the team in any capacity, helping out in 2020, looking forward to having him back in 2021. There would have been... they could have easily just released a team statement that said, we support Buster Posey and look forward to having him back in 2021, and that was it. But those guys getting on and elaborating on their support and really throwing the weight of the organization behind Posey, I think was absolutely the right thing to do. And I even think they went above and kind of beyond what a lot of good organizations would do. And while I don't want to say, like, credit to them for being good people, I think there are a lot of owners and maybe managers or coaches that wouldn't have done that same thing. So I thought that was great.
It's a culture thing. I mean, and you know, you go back to the Warriors, and the conversation about the Warriors is, well, do they have good culture because they were winning and dominant, or did the good culture come in before, you know, they were what they became? And I think you could, you know, make the case pretty strongly that the culture changed before they got to the level of, you know, being a really good team and being a championship team and then, you know, ultimately being a dynastic team. So I think you can look at the two things as separate, but also tie them together when you speak toward, all right, the Giants are in a weird place as a team right now, and it may not be a very good place as a team right now, but they're still trying to do the good, you know, the things that foster the best possible culture, to where as the players shift in and out over the course of 2020 and 21 and 22, and maybe even leading toward 23 by the time the actual talent and winning and those things catch up, that you're at least doing the right things on the way. Because look, you know, teams that aren't going to be good in terms of wins and losses, you sure as hell better be good in every other area, including the basic human decency, or you're just done. Like, you got no shot if you're, you know, not doing those things and you stink.
Yeah, this was an easy thing to get right, and they got it right and then some, I think. So whether that translates to anything on the field beyond this year, who knows? But at least get the human part of it right. at least get those points.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. There is a baseball component to this Buster Posey conversation. He is planning on returning. I know there was when Gabe Kapler referenced, you know, the other personal issue, and Posey, you know, came out and said, "Hey, I don't know if I'm in or I'm out," going back to the first day of practices. And everybody kind of wondered what it was. I was never under the impression that he was going to retire. I know that kind of got thrown around. Well, what is this other issue? I mean, it always seemed like it was either COVID-related or family-related or personal-related. And look, he's going to tell everybody when the time is right to tell everybody. And it's pretty clear in hindsight, you know, he didn't want to come on and, you know, announce the birth of, you know, two baby girls that he and his wife are going to adopt when it wasn't official yet. And they, you know, they were premature, and they're like, there's this human element where it's like, okay, now you understand why it was, hey, this is a personal issue. Buster's going to talk about it when Buster wants to talk about it. But I thought it was kind of ridiculous in a way that all of the speculation, because nobody knew what the personal issue was, turned to, well, maybe he's just going to retire. He is planning on coming back in 21. He does have the 2021, you know, year on his contract, and even 22, although the Giants can essentially pay him to go away for $3 million in 2022, as opposed to paying him, about $22 million for that year. But there is a baseball component to it, and we'll get into that because – as we shift gears and applaud Buster Posey for doing the right thing for him, the 2020 Giants watchability index just went down and took another hit, unfortunately. And I think you could almost make a case, Kyle, that the Buster Posey decision, and again, I want to make it very clear, I'm not being critical of the decision one iota. But as we start to shift toward, okay, what are the baseball ramifications of it? The Giants become less watchable in 2020 because Buster Posey's not playing. And I think a lot of fans think, okay, well, Posey's not playing. He's doing the right thing. Good for him. We support him as fans. And I think the next step of that, as you start to look at the baseball aspect of it, Kyle, is, well, now we're going to see Joey Bart. Now we're going to see Joey Bart. It's Joey Bart's time. It's Joey Bart's team. Yep. He's the top prospect. He's a catcher. And not so fast. Both Farhan Zaidi and Gabe Kapler, they referenced it early on. They reiterated it in the last couple of days. Still some development for Joey Bart. Don't expect him to have a huge role in the 2020 shortened season. So I think that's kind of a buzzkill that fans, I think a lot of fans don't really understand is coming yet. Cause if you haven't really been following some of these press conferences, you wouldn't really know. So I think there's a lot of fans that think they're going to see Joey Bart in a week and a half, and they're not, and they're going to be upset about it.
Yeah. I understand why the organization doesn't want to throw him in the majors yet, but what if you're the Giants, JD, and I sit down and I'm a Giants fan, and I sit down across from you after opening day and Joey Bart's not the starting catcher, and I say, why isn't Joey Bart the starting catcher? Why is he not playing 45 of these 60 games? What are you saying?
He's played 22 games at Double A, and that's the highest level he's played at. I mean, that's the technical answer.
And you're afraid that rushing him into the majors is going to stunt his growth and make him a not good player.
And he's just not ready. He's just not ready. I think that's their answer.
Sure.
My opinion is, to me, there's no downside. Because sure, I view 2020, yeah. I view 2020 as, look, it's a one-off anyway. The Giants didn't figure to be good anyway. You know, Buster Posey opting out gives you an opportunity to use that time as major league development. Now, you know what? If it means that he clearly isn't ready and he starts 2021 in Double A again and works his way back up, and we see him at the end of 21.
Yeah.
I would be fine with that aspect of it. To me, it's go young. It's 60 games. You probably aren't going to be good anyway. And, oh, by the way, there's no minor league system this year. So do you want this guy working out in Sacramento, taking batting practice for 2 months, or do you want him facing major league pitching? I mean, when you look at it that way, it almost becomes a no-brainer, Kyle.
Yeah, you can't get him 150 at-bats. Like, is that going to ruin his career if he gets 150 major league at-bats this year? And he's either really freaking good and the Giants are onto something, or, as you just said, you go back once minor leagues are reestablished, you put him back down there probably next year. And he works his way up, but he has this 150 at bats of major league experience. That's a absolute no brainer to me.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. More on the 2020 Giants as their watchability plummets even farther. We'll also get into more of the Buster Posey conversation, just where he is right now, what he's already accomplished, and also where he ranks among the all-time great Giants. We'll do that next. John Dickinson, Kyle Madsen, live and local on a Sunday here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Kyle Madsen, and you at 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. We are with you until 2 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game, live and local. On a Sunday, we're talking about Buster Posey's decision to opt out of the 2020 season, where that leaves the Giants, where that leaves Buster Posey at this point in his career, set to return in 2021. And I also think, we're talking, Kyle, about the Giants' watchability, and I think it takes two hits here because you're not going to get a chance to see Buster Posey. That's fine. I think he's making the right decision with, you know, he and his wife adopting twin girls that, are going to need some time in the NICU, born prematurely. He's not going to play. He wants to make sure he can stay safe, and therefore they can stay safe, and all of their attention can be on those babies. I think that's an awesome thing. Hat tip to Buster Posey. Translate this to a baseball standpoint. The Giants are less watchable because we're not going to see Buster Posey. Enter Joey Bart, but not really.
Right. I don't know if the Giants... I don't know if they, I hesitate to say that, like, they got, they're worse without Buster Posey, ostensibly, right? Like, I know Posey was kind of on the backside of his career, but there's no option that's going to be better than him right away. And I don't even think that this season for the Giants is necessarily about winning, which is why Joey Bart playing is, to me, so important. Because everything the Giants are doing is about the next 2, 3, and 4 years and what this team looks like down the road. So why I think Joey Bart is the most exciting piece this team has right now. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's, to me, you have to play him.
Well, when you go around the horn and you say, okay, Buster Posey's out, but you've still got Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford, Evan Longoria, Hunter Pence, Billy Hamilton, yes, Alex Dickerson and Mike Yastrzemski. Again, not prospects, but they could be fines. I likened them yesterday. You know, they could be, maybe along the lines of a Brandon Moss or a Josh Donaldson down the line, but those guys are finds, not top prospects. You
right.
know, they got to show that they can do it for a second year.
Are you turning on a Giants game? If they're 10-30, are you turning on a Giants game to watch Alex Dickerson?
No. And that's that's the thing, because the reality is if they're 10-30, he probably stopped playing 20 games ago.
Okay.
Because he's on the injured list.
Sure.
And so, again, look, the Giants don't. It's a veteran laden team. I mean, Tyler Heineman, Rob Brantley, Chadwick Tromp. I mean, these are the catchers that the Giants currently would be rolling out. I mean, those are the three catchers that are probably going to be on the roster unless they are able to make a trade, you know, for somebody else that's in a 60-man player pool.
Just real quick, to your point, Tyler Heineman, 29. Rob Brantley turns 31 day after tomorrow. Like, it's not like these are these young prospects who might break out and be the next catcher for a decade. They're just guys.
No, they're just guys, and I think it starts to lead down the path of, look, you know, I think you could get into Farhan Zaidi and like his first year at the helm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're giving him a letter grade, it's an incomplete, and I don't think it should be anything other than an incomplete, but I think how the top prospects are still a ways away. Mauricio Dubon was a ready-made player that was ready to come up. They make that trade. He looks like a nice young player. He's a player that you're encouraged to watch. I mean, he's not supposed to be a top prospect, but a good player, right? Like, he's a good player, young, ready to come up and play. You're going to see a lot of him. But, it's Brandon Belts and Longoria's and Crawford's and Wilmer Flores and Hunter Pence and Pablo Sandoval and Billy Hamilton and Heineman and Brantley and Tromp. And I mean, it's Yastrzemski and Dickerson, and Yastrzemski and Dickerson are on the high end of watchability comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
So while Farhan can be in a deconstructing phase, what are you going to do? Like, how do you use 2020 to your advantage? How do you use 2020 to make 2021 and 2022 better? And I just don't see how not playing Joey Bart does that. Like, to me, it's like you got to use Buster Posey opting out as a positive the best you can. And that doesn't mean, look, if you're not going to win games, you better be developing players that are going to be a part of your team the next time that you are going to be winning games. That's the goal here.
I don't know.
I think we're going to start to see some frustration, I think, even in a pandemic, if the Giants are just a sluggish, old, you know, kind of different version of what they've been, only now with Gabe Kapler and prospects still 2-3 years down the line. Like, I think there's going to be some frustration bubble to the surface from the fan base that could lead Farhan Zaidi to a difficult place as early as next year, Kyle.
See, and that's where I'm not certain that's on Farhan. He got dealt a really difficult hand in this team that was sort of halfway competitive for a month and a half last year, a month-long stretch. And the farm system was basically barren. And baseball's not like basketball or football where you can just draft a top prospect, plug them into your lineup, and your team changes. It is a long process to rebuild in baseball. And I... admittedly here, I'm not locked into minor league baseball, so everything I get from these different sources that are locked into minor league baseball. And everything I've read is that the Giants farm system has very rapidly climbed the ranks into one of major league's best. And that doesn't mean they have a bunch of players who are ready to play now, but they have a bunch of guys who are going to be really good in 2 or 3 years. And that's fine, but it's like, what do you do in the meantime? And I think the best case for the Giants is that a couple of these older guys, whether it's Johnny Cueto or Jeff Samardzija or Brandon Belt or Brandon Crawford or Evan Longoria, somebody, two, three of those guys, plays well enough that they have some kind of trade value. And Farhan might be able to move them for a prospect that can play right away next year. I think that's the best outcome, because you can't just accelerate clocks on guys that are two or three years away. A guy like Joey Bart, who was probably going to be up this year if everything had been a normal year, he was probably going to come up at the end of this year anyways. I see no harm in giving him at-bats.
Yeah, and I think that's where it's tricky, because he's in a spot where, you know, I think he's in a tough spot because they are a couple of years away from having those prospects, and he gets credit for drafting those players, and he'll get credit for developing them if they wind up being, you know, good and great players. But it's, how are you going to get to that point? You know, how are you going to, like, how is he going to bridge 2020 to 2022 or 2023? And I think, you know, how are you going to use that time other than having it just be a constant churn and turnover? Only, and I think in some levels it has been, but in other levels it just feels like, well, Brandon Belt's still here and Crawford's still here and Hunter Pence is back. And it's odd when you view because here's the thing. If you're not going to be good, you need to at least be young and watchable.
Right.
And I don't think the Giants are going to be either. And okay, you know, 2020 is going to be strange, but you want to use this year to set up next year. And I don't know. I think Joey Bart is a big part of that, even though you could make the case, all right, he's only played 22 games in AA, and that's the highest level that he's played. Like, I don't think that's necessarily wrong. And I think, you know, the text line from the 650, Chilton Autobody text line at 888-957-9570, if Joey Bart busts as a pro, it won't be because he was called up too early. It's because he didn't have what it takes. And I mean, I agree with that. Like, I would have no problem with Joey Bart playing 60 games in 2020 and then starting next year at AA if he isn't good this year.
Yeah,
what are we worried about?
That's kind of the whole thing. And when you talk about a team, like, the worst thing to be is old and not watchable. And I think it's inevitable that that's going to happen during a full-scale rebuild, kind of like the one the Giants are undergoing. But it's minimizing that. And if the Giants can, for a 60-game season, be old and unwatchable and then kind of move beyond that, like, that's a best-case scenario. Because they don't have to deal with it for 162 games. Like, there wasn't 102 extra games weren't going to change anything about this Giants season, probably. Now they have a shortened year where they can do stuff like afford to play Joey Bart for, you said 60. I'm even saying give him 40 or 45.
I think, look, and it all still could change. I mean, the Giants, there is still going to be a trade deadline for 2020.
Right.
There could be wholesale changes this offseason to where 2021 looks dramatically different than 2020. And that's why I'm not getting carried away with, and don't even really want to broach the topic of, you know, giving Farhan Zaidi a grade. Like, I think Farhan, like, it's fine. You know, we talked about this yesterday with Nice Guy Steven, and it's, you know, the Giants are in this position where it's a deconstruction. You know, I used the Reggie McKenzie line. You know, it's a when he took over after Al Davis passed away, it was a 2-year deconstruction to basically undo the things that Al Davis had done and sort of build the Raiders, or attempt to build the Raiders back toward how the rest of major, you know, the NFL was going. So I think the Giants are in that spot where it's, okay, they had the transition of Bruce Bochy was going out and Madison Bumgarner was going to leave, and there's still these other players. You know, obviously the Giants are coming off of a much better situation than the Raiders were, but I think it's fair to say about Farhan Zaidi, he gets at least 2 years to sort through all of that and lead it toward the path of changing. But the other thing I asked Steven, and I'll ask you, because I put him on the spot. I said, are the Giants rebuilding right now? Like, if you just said, what are the Giants right now? Are they rebuilding? Are the Giants a rebuilding team, Kyle? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
They're trying.
They're a rebuilding team. They're a rebuilding team with Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford, Evan Longoria, Billy Hamilton, Hunter Pence, Pablo Sandoval, Tyler Heineman. I mean, these guys
had to fill out a roster this year.
Kevin Gausman, Johnny Cueto, Jeff Samardzija, Drew Smyly. I mean, these are players that are going to play the bulk of the time. Wilmer Flores.
Sure.
I mean, those are the players that are going to be playing a majority of the time for the 2020 Giants. So I get, yes, they are a rebuilding team. But I think what the fans want to see is, if you're a rebuilding team, let's see these young players come up and take their lumps. Where the Giants are in a unique position is, and you alluded to this, and you're 100% correct, Joey Bart is really the only prospect that's in that middle ground of, well, you could bring him up. It's probably a little early to bring him up, but you could bring him up. Like the Lucianos and the Elliot Ramos and you know, the Hunter Bishops and those guys, you know, those guys are not – those guys are a ways away. Like, those guys aren't even close enough to think about bringing it up to the major leagues.
Right. And that's where, like, the Giants, on some level, at the core of a baseball season or any sport, the core of this season is to try and win and go win a championship. And I understand that reality sometimes dictates that that's not the case for all 30 teams, but the Giants couldn't just bring up a bunch of 19-year-olds and say, hey, go play. Like, let's see what you can do. Because that's not how this works. Like, that's where they would start to be doing a disservice to some of those players. So they have to do something. They have to fill out a roster. And so they have what is now this kind of veteran roster. And I think partly, this is a roundabout way to getting to this. Farhan, I think one of the things he's going to be really good at for the Giants, let's say in 3 years, several of the Giants prospects are up, they're playing well. Finding veterans who can produce for a season or two in the back end of their careers and putting them in positions where they can play. Like, the A's have been really good at that with Billy Beane, like just picking out a Brandon Moss who hasn't had a great career, but you put him in a right situation where he's playing some first base and he's playing against righties only. You put him in a position to succeed. And I think that's what Farhan's going to be really good at, which is why I'm weirdly a little optimistic that the Giants might not be like 15 win bad this year. I think they're going to be not very good, but I think there's something to that, and maybe I'm reaching here, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I don't think they're going to be 15 win bad, but I think they're probably going to win 25 or 26, and we're going to all say, hey, they weren't that bad, while failing to realize that 25 or 26 is basically a 65-67 win team over 162.
And I don't think that matters that much because of the thing you just said about all these players. None of these guys are going to be factors the next time the Giants are winning a World Series. So if they're awful this year, that doesn't matter that much to me. If they were a team that was, all their top prospects are up this year, and it's like, all right, hit the go button. Let's see what they got. And they were 20 wins, 25 wins in a 60 game season. That would be a problem to me.
The other aspect of this is, you know, they don't want to start the clock.
Yes.
The Major League service time clock for Joey Bart. And the 831 brings up a point on the text line that basically alerted me to make sure I noted this. Because of the no minor league setup for 2020, has Major League Baseball changed the notion of the player clock starting? No, the clock will still start. So, and he'll be able to accrue time, and assuming he comes up. And
what a bad system!
It's just, but the other part of that is the system's going to completely change. Like that's the other reason that I and this is part of the reason why I didn't bring it up is the whole service time thing is going to change because we're headed toward a work stoppage at the end of 21. So, like, I think the economics of baseball are going to be different, you know, 2022 and beyond. And, you know, I think what eventually you're going to see is younger players, believe it or not, and it remains to be seen. I think it's always still going to be better to have good young players because they're going to be less expensive. But I think, and this is a whole nother topic, but I think one of the things you're going to see is younger players that are really good are not going to be as cost effective anymore as they are currently. That's one of the things that ultimately will come out of that. There isn't going
to
be this 6-year club control where a guy from 22 to 28 is, you know, making $600,000 his first 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And then he's making 10 when he probably should be making 30. So
right.
like that stuff is going to be gone. Like you're really good players. And I don't think a lot of people know this, and it's a rough estimate, but it's like you're really good. Young players are making about 600 for 2 years, and then they get to arbitration, and then they might be making 10, and then maybe it's 12 or 14. Like, and then all of a sudden, I mean, they're not making any real money until they're almost on the downturn.
Right.
Because so what it does is it creates this scenario where guys aren't getting paid when they should, and then they get paid and they decline. And it winds up hurting their ability to get those contracts because there's fewer teams that want to actually pay players to be on a major decline. So it helps teams that draft well. And this is one of the underrated reasons why the A's, I think, actually, for as much as, you know, people complain about the fact that, and it's a fair complaint, they can't keep their players, but their ability to get those players, like they're better off not keeping Matt Chapman probably for $300 million. They're better off not, like, because at the point at which they would start to pay that player, he would in all likelihood start to decline. Now, maybe there's a couple of years there, the first couple of years of a deal. But I mean, I go back to Jason Giambi. Yeah, that's okay. That's 2001. But, you know, should the A's have given Jason Giambi a, you know, $200 million contract in 2002 where he was with the A's till 2008? I mean, that would have been – and then he's not the same player? Like to me, the A's – and I always say this, teams like the A's benefit from the fact that they would never sign anybody to a contract. So while their fans hate it, but like – and Buster Posey's a perfect example. The A's would never sign their Buster Posey to the contract the Giants signed him to. And because the A's would never do that, they never find themselves in a position where they have a declining Buster Posey for the last 3 years, making $22 million a year, because they just would never be in it. He would have been gone in 2014.
Right. And that's where I'm wondering if the Farhan era in San Francisco is going to be a little bit like how the A's are run, except they do keep the Matt Chapmans that they draft.
I think that's the dream scenario.
Yeah.
I think that's what when you look at the Giants ownership and management, and this was my take at the time, and I think it still rings true, and it's exactly your point. I think the Giants wanted the ability to operate more financially efficient with the fringes, right?
Right. Like, exactly.
I think they want the ability to be better at finding, you know, the Brandon Mosses and the Josh Donaldsons and the, you know, and the Matt Chapmans and the Matt Olsons, and that, like, they wanted to be better at drafting and finding guys like that and Yastrzemskis and Dickersons, but they also wanted to make sure that the veteran players that they sign have a better chance of succeeding. Because I think the Giants found themselves, you know, they signed Angel Pagan, they signed Marco Scudero, some of those moves where they sign guys and it winds up not working out initially, but the actual length of the contract, you probably would have been better off, you know, signing a couple of different guys to smaller deals to bide your time. So it's to me, it's operating more functionally on the fringes, drafting that young major talent, and then, yes, having the pocketbook to use the money that you're saving along the way to, when you do get a Matt Chapman or a Matt Olson type of player, if you're the Giants, you are able to sign that player to a deal that the A's or the Rays or some of these other teams would not be able to.
It's a little bit like Theo Epstein with the Cubs.
Yeah.
Where they stack this talented team kind of through the draft. They plug in at the margins with the Jake Arriettas of the world and whatnot. And all of a sudden they're building a World Series contender. I think that's what's going to happen with the Giants, where it may take 2 or 3 years to get there, but once they do, I think they're going to be really good and set up to be really good for a long time. And I think it's because
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. We'll continue that conversation coming up, and we'll also get into the 49ers, and I got a lot of fun things jotted down today that we can spend a segment or two on as well. But we'll keep the baseball chatter rolling. It's John Dickinson, Kyle Madsen. 1 hour down, 3 hours to come here on 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.